You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's a great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout. A Buffalo football podcast hosted by Matt Parrino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUp.com.
The Bills make me wanna.
What is up, everybody? Welcome in to a Monday edition of Shout a Buffalo Bills podcast. We're starting it the best way we know how, with Ryan looking down at his phone so you can see that full bald dome. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing on a Monday evening. And you can't see him, but our old friend Bruce Nolan from Buffalo Rumblings is in the house. He's creeping. He's out there somewhere. And Bruce, I got to tell you, Ryan and I have been very nostalgic the last couple of weeks, sending texts back and forth. We're coming up on the four-year anniversary from the start of Shout. And I went back recently and took a look at our first episode, and boom, there you were, my friend. Always will be a part of that history. You and Nick back, the Nick and Nolan show, the first iteration of your podcast. It is great to have you back on. It's been too long, buddy.
Well, I mean, I just assumed that you just grew way past me, and, you know, I was just being really happy and waving at you as you drove away in the distance. Like, that was just always the assumption that I had made as far as why I hadn't been back yet. But the fact that I was there at the beginning, it's one of those moments that just kind of crystallizes in your brain, kind of like Joe Buscaglia was on the first episode of Food for Thought, which launched with me and Nick Geary right when Josh Allen signed his extension. Right. Wow. That's always going to be like a crystallized memory for me, like a core memory if we're in a Pixar film. And so hopefully I can always be part of that core memory for the Shout. But it is wonderful to be here.
It is wonderful to have you. Ryan Talbot, how are you tonight, buddy?
I'm doing great. And, you know, you gave me flack for the head down. Usually Bills fans, what happens is Matt's like, all right, you ready? And I'll say, yep. And they'll be like, okay. All right, here we go. All right, here we go. And then he hits, like, the third or the fourth, here we go, is when he actually hits a live button. I was not ready tonight. He hit me with that actual first-time start.
And don't be, if you're just watching, tuning in right now, don't be alarmed. Bruce Nolan is in the house, but he's kind of behind the screen. For some reason, his little box isn't showing up. But he's been running from the FBI for years, so he wasn't going to put his face on the screen anyway. It's part of the whole shtick. Explain to people, actually, those that don't know you, why your face doesn't appear on video podcasts.
I just never bought a camera, truthfully. No, I'm just kidding. The Bruce Nolan moniker is a carryover from years and years ago when there was official Buffalo Bills message boards. Ryan Talbot remembers he and I were both on the official Buffalo Bills message boards. And my username at that time was Bruce Nolan. So I came over to Twitter when the Buffalo Bills message board shut down, and I needed to use the same username so that people would recognize me. Oh, it's Bruce Nolan, of course, you know, so we can get in touch with, you know, Sean and with Robin Mundy and all the people like that. And so I did it with no intention of ever being a content creator ever. And then it ended up kind of falling backwards into it. Kind of Nick sort of drugged me into it and said, we need to do this to kind of promote the Bills backers bar and things like that. And so I was like, all right, sure, cool, I'll do it. And I just thought I'd just use the same moniker, but it was a video. It wasn't a video podcast, it was an audio podcast. So I didn't have to think about it. And then as I started to distance myself from the Bruce Nolan character and my real life persona, I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to keep that very separate. And so that's because of that. I just never really did it.
There you go. So everybody understands. And if you hear a voice and neither mine or Ryan's lips are moving, that is why. You won't have that problem if you're listening on any of the audio platforms. Quick announcement before we get into the bulk of the show. We got a lot to talk about. Catching up with Bruce here. I got a fun idea that I want to get to in a few minutes. We got some news this morning. Two pieces of news that we'll get into here on the show, and then talk a little bit more about Curtis Samuel. The Shout Podcast is coming to a brand new live location 2 weeks from now. Actually, a little bit more than 2 weeks, Wednesday, April 3rd, 6 p.m. Shout is coming to 2-9's Kitchen Bar inside the Whirly Golf Dome at 8230 Whirly Drive, Buffalo, New York. We are going to come out, Ryan. We got to get there early, get a couple swings in. It's just that time of year where you can get out to the range inside the golf dome, get a couple swings. The weather's about to turn, and then come over to 2-9's. Get yourself a bite to eat. Get yourself a beverage. Hang out. Talk bills with us all night long. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, cannot wait for this new venue, this new event that we have planned for early April. Once again, I'll be up in Buffalo for the entire day, checking out some different things, going a few different places. So cannot wait for the event, though, that night.
And also, apologies to everybody that watched the show last Saturday. That's all on Mr. Perino here. I did not switch over the audio feed from like what you all heard, which was the ambient sound and hearing everything in the bar, to our microphone feed that is clicked over for all those live shows. Won't happen again. It was a one-time error. We just missed it. We didn't have a on-the-ground producer. That will not happen again. So apologies for that. Listen, let's get into the news of the day. Ryan Talbot and the Bills are finally having a little action in the safety department. Julian Blackman, Colts safety for the last couple of seasons, had himself a torn Achilles a couple of years ago, worked his way back from that. Last year had a career year, 4 interceptions, former third round draft pick. He has been on the free agent market. It's been a slow materializing market for the safety position and some kind of underwhelming contracts. He's reportedly, according to Jordan Schultz, coming to Buffalo this week for a visit. Let's start with Ryan, and then I'll pivot over to Bruce. What do you guys think of the possibility of Julian Blackman as maybe the Micah Hyde replacement?
I like the addition, the potential addition. I like what he did last year in Indianapolis. Like you said, it took some time for him to get back to that starting lineup following a pretty serious injury. But what I will also say is that does not take me out of the Bills drafting a safety relatively early within the first, 4 rounds of this draft and trying to find an upgrade, trying to find someone that could potentially leapfrog him on this depth chart sooner rather than later. It's a good move. It's a move that the Bills need to make. They need to add a safety to this roster. But it doesn't necessarily sit there with me and say, well, everything's going to be fine in the safety room now. It's not a Justin Simmons type or level of move, obviously. So for me, it would be a good move if he ends up joining the Bills, but it's also something where I still need more between now and week one, which obviously still a long way until then.
There are some parallels between the Julian Blackman attempted signing, at least, and some of the previous moves that this regime has made in regards to safety. So Jordan Poyer, if you recall, was coming off of a fairly notable injury when the Buffalo Bills signed him. Julian Blackman was just able to kind of bounce back from his own torn Achilles injury. In addition, Micah Hyde was sort of a hybrid defender that wasn't looked at as actually a true deep safety. When he came to the Buffalo Bills, ended up becoming one of the best deep ball defenders in football. And for a meaningful amount of time, throwing the ball deep center against the Buffalo Bills was just hilariously ineffective. There was one point we were 2/3 of the way through the season, and I was just checking it for the fun of it. And the passer rating against the Buffalo Bills for the deep center of the field was 0. It was just actually 0. Like, you'd be better off just spiking the ball than you would be trying to throw it deep middle. And so Julian Blackman had sort of that hybrid defender role this year. He was a converted cornerback, and after previously being almost exclusively, but primarily, a deep safety, maybe a little slot, all of a sudden, In 2023, the role was very different. It was 468 snaps out of the box. It was 308 snaps from free safety, and then it was 175 snaps from the slot. So all of a sudden, he becomes this hybrid defender a la Micah Hyde in Green Bay. And I think there's something there when it comes to his ability deep. I know that he played more in the box than he did and from free safety, but I think there's something there. If you look at his balls that he had defended, right? His interceptions, his passes defense, the overwhelming majority of those things happened when he was playing deep middle. And if you're Indianapolis, you have Gus Bradley as your defensive coordinator. Gus Bradley plays a massive amount of cover three. Like, that's always been Gus Bradley's MO, right? Just tons of cover three. So you're always going to have a dedicated deep middle safety. There have been some rumors this offseason that the Bills want to start playing a little bit more man coverage, which means you're probably going to end up with a little bit more cover one, which means you would need, again, someone who's comfortable, deep safety and roving left to right in between the hash marks. You got to go sideline to sideline if necessary. And so I think there's a weird potential fit here. When you look at some track record of what the Buffalo Bills have historically converted into safeties in Sean McDermott's system, a lot of them share traits with what you see from Julian Blackmon. I would be interested.
So I like everything that you said there. And it's interesting because, you know, the Micah Hyde piece of this puzzle is just kind of still lingering out there. We don't know if he's going to play next season. It seemed like he's kind of on his way potentially to retirement. We don't have a decision there. And actually, the clock's ticking on that. I mean, he could hang out there for a while. I still think the plan is for him to do his charity softball game in Buffalo. So obviously, there'll be some media around that. So I wouldn't be surprised if we learn what he's going to do before we get to June and July, you know, because there are veteran players that end up leaving a team and hanging out there waiting for camps, waiting for preseason, maybe even the start of the regular season before they make a decision. It'll be interesting to see when Hyde does that. But if you look at his production, you know, we're a couple years removed from that historic, transcendent, all-time moment against the Patriots where he came across the field and had that interception. I mean, that kind of encapsulated what he meant to this defense over the course of his career. There was a drop-off in production from a coverage perspective this past season. You go and look at three of the first five full seasons that Micah Hyde started for the Bills. His coverage grade from PFF as that strong safety, 90.4. 88.6 and 89.8. That was in 17, 18, and then again in 2021. He obviously missed most of the season in 22 when he came back last year, playing 912 total snaps, 69.8 in his coverage grade. That was a significant drop off. And then you look at a guy like Blackmon, who came in last season with the four interceptions and ended up with a grade slightly above what Micah Hyde did. Ryan, I think this has the potential. A young player at 25 with the traits that Bruce mentioned, getting him into the Sean McDermott system. I agree with you too. I don't think this precludes you from drafting a safety and then maybe taking some of the pressure off of that safety to come in and replace one of these veterans from the jump. You can give them a little bit of runway and then see where it materializes. But we've seen in multiple years now, Poyer dealing with injuries galore 2 years ago, Hyde last year banged up with the neck at times, missing most of the season 2 years ago. You're going to need depth at these spots.
100% need depth. And right now, as you sit there, you look at Taylor Rapp, Cam Lewis is your potentially 1-2. You know, Blackman's an upgrade in terms of what he would add to the room, and you'd slot him into a starting role there. But yeah, like I'm saying, if a Tyler Newbin falls to you on day two of the draft, or you know, Cam Kitchens, I know he didn't test well. I know that the relative athletic score is significantly lower than what the Bills generally look for in terms of their prospects, but he fits in terms of knowing the Jamila Dye and things like that. So it doesn't keep me away from the draft. It's an upgrade in terms of what they currently have in the safety room. So in that regard, I would be all for it. I'm just saying I'm keeping options open in the draft.
Anything else on that, Bruce? Sorry, I didn't want to cut you off if you had anything else to add. I can't see your facial expression, so I don't know. Usually I go off of like, or just sitting there on your hands and it's all good.
You do that thing where you kind of open your mouth part of the way to let someone know there's something that wants to come out so you can make sure that you say something. No, I think Ryan's totally on point. I think that this idea that you would take Blackman and you're just fine there. You might be if you didn't have 11 draft picks, right? I mean, if you have 11 draft picks, somebody should be a defensive back at that point. In fact, you can make an argument that the only really thing strong that Dick Geron contributed to the Buffalo Bills sports culture was you can never have too many defensive backs. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to draft one or two every single year, you should probably go ahead and do it. And the Buffalo Bills are looking markedly stronger at cornerback, even with the release of Tre'Davious White, than they have been at safety. So I don't think it precludes the Bills from investing in that position at all. I think it takes the sting off. I think it makes it puts you in a position that Brandon Bean has always put himself in, which is that he wants to go into the draft without glaring needs. The one time he went in with a glaring need, we all saw what happened. He traded up for Kyrie Elam. Mm-hmm. That's what happened. The last time the Buffalo Bills went with this massive glaring need. So he's trying to plug these holes strictly from a numbers standpoint where it just takes the edge off the need where you absolutely have to. You don't want to be pressed. It's almost a self-control mechanism for Brandon Bean when it goes to the draft.
I want to move or stay on the defensive side of the ball and move to some other business that happened today. The Bills, which, I mean, if you go back to the early part of the season, I brought on Mike Gennetti from SpotTrack.com, and this was one of the first moves that we talked about, and that was extending Taron Johnson, one of the best nickel corners, if not the best nickel corners in the NFL. That deal got done today. I think at the time, Mike alluded to the fact that it would create somewhere in the neighborhood of $4 million in cap space. The Bills are somewhere between $8 and $11 million in cap space right now. We'll get a better idea of where that's at when we talk to Brandon Bean in Orlando, likely next Monday at the owners' meetings. I'm heading down there on Sunday. Excited. That'll be the first time we get a chance to talk to Brandon and Sean since the combine. So we'll get an update on a lot of things. I mean, that's the first time we'll talk to Sean McDermott since the mass exodus that's happened with his defense. Talking about Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, potentially, and Tre'Davious White. Interested to get his thoughts on that. But Taron Johnson gets extended today. New three-year contract. He's now the highest-paid nickel corner in the league, Ryan. And we talked about this a couple days ago. You were almost right on the money with the money.
Yeah, we were talking about the Kenny Moore deal, and I said if I were the Bills, I would offer 3 years, $30.1 million, call it a day. The Bills upped it a little bit higher than that, but at both scenarios, he ends up being the highest-paid nickel cornerback in the league, and rightfully so. He is so important, so vital to this Sean McDermott defense in terms of everything that he does that it almost feels like he's been an unsung hero because there's been so many other guys who have rightfully so been given that name of like the heart and soul of the team and, you know, Matt Milano and his importance to the system. But Taron Johnson, arguably, I could make the case that over the last 3 years, no player on this defense has been more important.
It's a situation for me where you look at Taron Johnson, you've always known that his value comes in the ability of the Buffalo Bills to not have to go into base defense when other teams go heavy. And that's always been important. I would make an argument that Taron Johnson's value is actually going to go up over the next couple of years, not down, because of the way that the NFL is trending. The NFL is trending in a meaningful way, kind of in a cyclical nature, back to heavier personnel. You see what you see from the Detroit Lions and the San Francisco 49ers. And a lot of teams have spent what they used to spend 20% of their snaps or 15% of their snaps in what I would consider to be heavy personnel, which would be 12, 21, 13 personnel, right? Now, all of a sudden, it's 30, 35, 40% of their snaps and heavy personnel. It's cyclical. It's coming back around again because defense has said, well, we got to be lighter and faster to deal with all the 11 and 10 that was going around. And now all of a sudden NFL offense is going, okay, well, we're just going to beat you up now. We're going to bring in multiple tight end packages. We're going to pass out of 12. I mean, everyone assumes heavier personnel packages are associated with running, and that's not true, right? Most of the explosive plays for a lot of NFL teams come out of heavier packages because they're able to pack the box and then throw it over top of you. And so the ability of the Buffalo Bills to stand pat and go, no, we're just not going to. I know you want us to go base. We're going to refuse because we don't have to, because we have Taron Johnson. So we don't have to go heavy when you go heavy. It eliminates a lot of those explosive plays. Historically, over the Sean McDermott era, the Buffalo Bills have been exceptional at stopping explosive plays in the passing game. The reason is they don't have to zig when you zag. If you go 13, we'll say, yeah, that's fine. We'll bring in an extra linebacker. But if you want to go 12, we'll just stay in nickel. And the ability to do that, to not be dictated to, is a massively underrated part of defensive scheming. And it's all because you have Taron Johnson. He's the straw that stirs the drink. And so I think that was important 5 years ago. I think it's even more important now. I think it will continue to be exceedingly important as the Buffalo Bills trend into 2024 and 2025.
The Bills do a really good job of paying attention to, you know, that comment that you just made, the straw that stirs the drink, what other teams perceive their defense to be and how it kind of gets going. I feel like 3 years ago was really when you saw an uptick in opposing defensive coordinators, defensive head coaches, starting to talk about Matt Milano and this under-the-radar guy that meant so much to this defense. To me, I feel like last year, I felt that was Taron Johnson, finally getting some of his singular shine. Obviously, he was a second-team All-Pro. I think in a lot of ways led this defense. But also, Ryan, he's a guy that's been so reliably available. I mean, Remember back early in his career when he was kind of banged up a lot? We talked about his shoulder injuries year after year because of the physical nature of his game. I mean, he's really taken all of that, I guess, from a Bills fans perspective, knock on wood, out of his game. And he's been nothing but reliable for them, starting 17 games last year, 16 games the year before that. He's been consistently available, and you need that presence when you've seen other guys go down on that back end.
Yeah, when he was first starting out here, he hit like a linebacker, but his size was not linebacker-ish. So that was the issue, because you're right, he would lay the wood on defenders, and it led to a lot of nagging injuries. It led to a lot of issues where he missed, you know, short increments of time, even if it was just a few series before he could come back in. The availability is so important in terms of just about everything that he does for the secondary. And we've seen it time and time again, how important he is to this unit. So having him locked up, he was just one of those no brainer moves that we've talked about over the last few episodes. And it's good to see that the Bills locked him up. If there's one thing you can say about this regime, they really do reward the players within their own system that shine, that produce, and that develop over time. And he's done all of those things and checked all of those boxes.
We had checked two more boxes, but then I put a call out to our Shout Buffalo Bills insiders, which, by the way, you can become an insider right now with a 2-week free trial, 716-528-6727. Just send a text to that number. Sign yourself up. You get a 2-week free trial, $3.99 a month after that. I put out a message, asked for any questions. We did get a couple of them. We'll handle that at the end of the show. But Bruce, I want to start with you here, because we talked a little bit about it on Saturday, but obviously there was audio issues. So let's reshuffle the deck here and talk about it again. You know, I've gotten the sense from a portion of the fan base that it feels like a step back because, you know, so many constants on this roster are now playing elsewhere, and in Tre'Davious White about to be playing elsewhere. There's reports that he's visiting, I believe, with the Raiders, maybe with the 49ers. Do you feel like any differently about the contender status of the Bills, you know, knowing that we still have a lot of runway in this offseason with the names that are changing and what they've brought in and the potential of what they can bring in the draft?
It's so weird. The word better is such a big part of the offseason. You know, did you get better? Did you get better? And the answer to that question for me is always better relative to what? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that's interesting is that better doesn't occur in a vacuum. So better relative to what? So look at the Kansas City Chiefs, right? The Kansas City Chiefs retained Chris Jones. They are sniffing around trading L'Jarius Sneed, right? They brought on Hollywood Brown, which I think is a minor upgrade from Marquez Valdes-Scantling as far as that deep threat goes. So I think that's meaningful there. And you go, okay, what else have they done? Okay, let's look at the Dolphins. What have they done? Is anyone going to look at the Dolphins and go, oh, man, it's just head and shoulders better than they were? They had a mass exodus just like the Buffalo Bills, except the players they lost were a lot better than the players the Buffalo Bills lost, with Christian Wilkins most notably among them. You know, when you lose a player who goes on to sign a top five contract in his position, you lost him because he was really good at that point. You know, the Buffalo Bills, I mean, there's a meaningful argument that after last year, Christian Wilkins has a better NFL career than Ed Oliver. And when you look at the comparative contracts, that's feeling a little different now than it was before when you look at value. So for me, it's better relative to what? I think one of the things we always saw and we always acknowledge it as a possibility, but we saw it in action this last year, is just because you lose someone doesn't necessarily mean you take a step back. And I mean Tremaine Edmonds. That's what I'm talking about. The big discussion point, the entirety of the 2023 offseason was, what are the Buffalo Bills going to do at linebacker? What are they going to do at linebacker? How are they going to place Tremaine Edmonds? He played all these snaps. He was spoken of so incredibly highly by the regime that everybody thought he'd get re-signed just based on the narrative. And then he doesn't get re-signed. He goes to Chicago Bears. Terrell Bernard comes in and lights the world on fire. And we're all going, all right, I'm going to raise my hand. I felt dumb. Right. And we're all, so just because you lose someone doesn't even mean you take a step back. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you don't. And when you look at the play of specifically Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, right, even though they were stalwarts for this team and they played meaningful snaps all the way to the end, is there somehow no opportunity for the Buffalo Bills to have gotten better in those positions? Is that not possible at all? When you look at players like A.J. Epenesa, if A.J. Epenesa's contract indicates he's going to take one step up in the rotation, is there not an opportunity for him to play more meaningful snaps and have better production on the defensive line? When you look at Curtis Samuel versus Gabe Davis, right? Just qualitatively what different players they are. Let's just ignore for a second who's better or worse. You can't see me. I'm doing air quotes. Let's ignore that for a second. But qualitatively, look how different they are. They could not possibly be more different players, Curtis Samuel and Gabe Davis. Does just the qualitative difference open up an opportunity for the offense to do things that it clearly wanted to do last year, but didn't necessarily have the personnel that you would like to do it? I'll give you a great example. How many flare screens did you see at the end of last year to Stephon Diggs where you go, that's really not Stephon Diggs' game. Like, that's right. Really not what he does. Imagine those with Curtis Samuel instead. All of a sudden, the EPA on those plays goes up. So for me, when I think about better, I think better relative to what exactly? So the Buffalo Bills got a player that I think played extremely effectively last year out of the roster with the cutting of Mitch Morse. That's the player that I'm most concerned about the loss of. Not just because he's a pivot man, but also because of the players that the Buffalo Bills lost, he was the one who I think played at the highest level last year.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that's it, but that's the most meaningful blow to this team. And you have additions. So to me, it's better relative to what? And when I look around the AFC, I don't feel the same level of freak-outedness, I think, that maybe others are feeling.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think that's a great way of putting it. When you look at the top tier of the AFC, like you said, the Chiefs, I don't feel like the Chiefs have gotten significantly better than the Bills this offseason. You know, you can look at some of the other contenders. You can make an argument for Houston, adding some really good players to that roster after what we saw from them last year. But you want to see them sustain that success over time before you truly look at them as a Super Bowl contender in this conference. But for the Bills, you're right. Mitch Morse was the big loss. He played at a high level. Now you're shuffling the O-line a little bit. There's questions about what can be done there. In terms of almost the rest of the offense, I don't really think they're missing much. I think Curtis Samuel fits this offense extremely well, as we already saw with him and Joe Brady in 2020. In terms of the usage, how the Bills can line him up, where they can put him, how they can get the ball in his hands. You mentioned the flanker, or you mentioned the screens. That's something that Matt brought up recently too, in terms of that's not Stephon Diggs' game. That is more of Curtis Samuel's game. The Bills have to fix the blocking in front of him on plays like that. But regardless, the offense really isn't missing much. They bring back Ty Johnson. You have obviously James Cook back in the fold. There's nothing really on the offense. And a lot of those defensive players were players that were on the end of their careers. And you can even look at Leonard Floyd. Leonard Floyd was highly productive for the Bills in terms of the sack numbers, in terms of the production and the time, you know, the price tag when they signed him, everything. But he disappeared for the last month plus of that season. So the Bills have a chance to improve in that regard too. AJ Epenesa, I know he also disappeared in terms of the stats, but he had a very serious rib injury that occurred. He was playing at a much higher level than we had previously seen from him in terms of his overall game. So more opportunity for him to up his snaps. We know you're going to get Matt Milano back. That alone is going to be a big boost to this defense. And then on the back end, you know, you lose Trey White, who first pick of this regime, when healthy, was an outstanding cornerback. He hasn't been healthy the last few years. And, oh, by the way, you have Rasul Douglas, Christian Benford starting as your 1-2, who both of them played at a very high level last year. You have Taron Johnson back in the fold. So, no, I don't feel like this team has taken a step back. They still have 11 draft picks that, you know, they might not use all 11 of them, but they can use those, maneuver around in the draft and address some of the other needs and improve in other areas where they were getting a little bit older or long in the tooth. So I think that this team is still set up very well to contend in the AFC and just also be a Super Bowl contender in general.
Our good friend AJ Sabalski, former producer of the Shout podcast, now has his own podcast, AJ's Analysis, covering the Bills and high school sports over at the Batavia Daily News. If I'm saying that wrong, I apologize. It's escaping me at the moment. I want to see Bruce on a flare screen. And I got news for you, AJ, and everybody else watching. Bruce was quite the wide receiver back in the day, if I have my history right. Am I right, Bruce?
I could run a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I could run a little bit back in the day. It wasn't quite the, I can throw the ball over those mountains. It wasn't quite that level of, you know, fame and infamy perhaps, but I could move a little bit. I mentioned on social media the other day that ironically enough, my first touchdown ever in organized football came when I was playing defense, not offense, which is just a fun little Bruce-ism.
Love it. Love Bruce-isms. And I want another Bruce-ism here in a moment on the Curtis Samuel signing. I want to get into that a little bit with you today. His contract numbers have sprinkled out here over the last 12 hours. And, man, I tweeted it or put it in the subtext, the insider chat. Brandon Bean does it again. 2024 salary cap hit for Samuel comes in just under $4 million. It's exactly what you'd want on a, you know, I'd say top five after the top three guys signed. I would have put Curtis Samuel in the top five of potential free agent wide receivers. You get him on a really cost-effective year one cap hit. It goes up next year. It's essentially a two-year contract. You can get out after the third year. But, you know, my prediction is there he's going to play that out as long as Joe Brady is here, because I think of what he does for this offense. In your mind, though, we talked quite a bit about this in the last two podcasts. I wrote about it in my column, Five Thoughts and a Grade, on Saturday. I don't think this changes anything for how the Bills are going to approach the draft, mainly because I don't think this draft is just about 2024. When you have 11 draft picks and you're paying the quarterback what you're paying them, you need to think about next season, the season after that, and Stephon Diggs is definitely on the downside of his career. We're going to get into that in a minute too, probably. What do you think this Curtis Samuel move tells you, and what are your expectations and what it means for the draft?
I think it tells me that they want to be more versatile from their wide receivers. I think that when you look at Gabe Davis and you look at the methods by which he has historically won, later in the play down the field. And he is almost exclusively an outside receiver, although Brian Daboll used him a little bit more in the slot. But even then, it was very Christian Kirk-ish when he was in Arizona sitting. It was vertical slot stuff. And he wasn't a player who was going to uncover quickly in the route, but he won down the field with size and ball skills. Curtis Samuel could not be more different of a player. And when you look at his ability, you can primarily line him up in the slot, for sure. The overwhelming plurality of his snaps took place in the slot. But he had 41 carries in at the backfield when he was with Carolina, and his offensive coordinator was Joe Brady. So they want to do stuff with receivers. And we saw actually a little bit of this with another thing with Stephon Diggs that you probably shouldn't have done. Stephon Diggs took a couple carries during the regular season. We all just kind of forgot about it, but like, it's clearly in there wouldn't you rather have someone like Curtis Samuel who runs a 4.3 140?
Can I bring up something on that real quick? Can I bring up something on that real quick? Not to interrupt you, and don't lose your train of thought. But the biggest irritation, and I had this for Dorsey before Brady, but my biggest criticism of Brady is setting up things like he did with playing Stephon Diggs out of the backfield and never really trying to hit the home run with it. And I'm not talking about carries, to your point. Why are you handing the ball off to Stephon Diggs? Like, that's not how you use him best. But could you imagine, like, running him out of the backfield on some type of wheel route down the field and trying to confuse a defense and getting him out into space, especially for a guy that you're trying to get going and it never felt like they were able to down the stretch? I wasn't happy with the way that it never seemed like there's so many different parts of the offense that I thought that maybe Brady was saving or Dorsey before him that they never really tried to uncork.
It's funny because when you look at Curtis Samuel and look at his ability to be able to do things like that, you say, okay, well, we can hand him the ball, but we also really like him isolated on a linebacker. I mean, if you get a pivot route out of the backfield for Curtis Samuel, you like that matchup, right? Curtis Samuel, not known as being in like an unbelievable route technician, but yet he still separates really, really well because of just quickness and speed. Right? He doesn't need to be as nuanced of a route runner as Stephon Diggs because as far as physical gifts go, he's a stellar, stellar athlete. He came to Ohio State as a running back, and coming out of the draft, it was, where do you play this guy? Because he got a ton of carries, but he got a lot of passes too. And you were like, okay, are you going to play him as a 5'11", 195-pound running back? Or are you going to play him as a receiver? And of course, he got drafted in the second round. Brandon Bean was the assistant GM for the Panthers when they drafted Curtis Samuel. So he has all the scouting report on what you can do with him. And I think he's just one of those people who allows you to unlock some of those things. It's almost like Brady had these great ideas, but he didn't really have the people for those great ideas. And so now all of a sudden you think, well, he's a player that can do those things that we saw Joe Brady do, but can actually be effective and allow us to set up that second punch by saying, okay, here's a move. Here's a move. I throw rock. You throw papers, here's scissors, right? I mean, there's a lot of that dynamic to offensive play calling, but if you just only have rock, there's not a lot you could do. And so I think having more dynamic athletes that you can be versatile with is never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing. And you bring someone in that knows the terminology, knows the offense, knows the scheme. And that's going to help a lot of the guys in this offense, too. It doesn't matter the position, whether you're talking James Cook at running back or the wide receiver room. So he's going to be a major asset in that regard as well. But, you know, line him up in the backfield, like you guys said, and give him his carries, but let him run routes. Give him the ball sometimes or fake it to him and then have James Cook run some routes. I know Cook had some tough drops over the year, but, you know, when they used him in Carolina, you had a very dynamic back and Christian McCaffrey back there as well at times. James Cook can be just as good in terms of that catching the ball out of the backfield, running the ball as we saw this year. It's a lot of pieces that, again, I'm sure that Joe Brady's really happy to already have some of those guys here like a Cook, but to bring in a Curtis Samuel is going to benefit this team. But then, Matt, going back to your talking point about the draft, it goes back to something that Bruce said. Brandon Bean wants to go into this draft without any glaring holes, any glaring needs. That doesn't mean that the addition of Curtis Samuel takes them out of the wide receiver game at pick 28 or at pick 60. I still think you're looking for that long-term true outside wide receiver, maybe the heir apparent to Stephon Diggs. And in a class like this, I really feel like with one of those first two picks, the Bills can find a player like that. So he definitely helps this offense out. He helps them get to where they want to be in terms of what Joe Brady envisions this offense being. But it certainly does not eliminate the potential to take one, maybe two wide receivers in this draft.
We have almost 3,000 people watching / listening across three platforms right now. You are all amazing. We appreciate you tuning in for this special Monday night edition. We have Bruce Nolan from the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network. You can find his show, the Bruce Exclusive, over there. Those come out every Thursday, if I'm correct there, Bruce.
You got it.
All right. We're going to get to our insiders segment here in a moment. Before we do, we got a super chat from Carl Tomlin here on the YouTube channel. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you. Hit that like button. Subscribe to the channel as well. The Bills still need a wide receiver at number 28. What type of body type, skill set, should they be looking for. Josh Allen plays better with fast, agile wide receivers who can separate. Big body isn't best. And I think this is a really interesting conversation because I shared it, I think it was on my Instagram account the other day about, you know, I think it was like an ESPN post about like not letting the Chiefs get Xavier Worthy, who ran just that unbelievable 40-yard dash and played at Texas and obviously came into the combine maybe with his draft stock at a certain spot, and it's absolutely exploded over the last couple of weeks. You know, I saw some clips of Troy Franklin, and I got all aboard that train. He's obviously a more slender, taller receiver who can get kind of that sixth gear is what I think is really special. I agree with Carl's point that, like, I think that skill set, that smaller, agile wide receiver, is something that that Josh Allen utilizes pretty well. So do you feel like, I think the good question off of this, Bruce, and you could start, and then Ryan, do you feel like it should be less about body and more about versatility / skill set and like the top end of a specific trait that you're looking for? Because whoever you take, if it's in the first round, probably second or third, is probably who you envision at least going into this thing as Stephon Diggs's eventual replacement. I think it's healthy to approach it that way.
I think you're right. And I think that there's always been kind of a clear line that Carl brought up between the players that Josh Allen likes to throw the ball to and the players that he doesn't necessarily mesh as well with. This is the reason why I have historically been out on Keon Coleman. I don't think that Keon Coleman's stylistically the type of receiver that has historically blended well with Josh Allen. I think one of the things that is a constant kind of misnomer when it comes to quarterbacks is that if you give them a receiver with a larger catch radius, that will deal with zip code accuracy. You say what you will about Josh Allen. Josh Allen is not a precision passer, right? He's a zip code accurate passer who likes to see it and then throw it. And because you have an absolute howitzer attached to your right arm, he can get away with that. He can see something open and then pull the trigger, and he can throw it later in the down than most quarterbacks can because his arm strength will bail him out. And I think that the idea when you came in, you had Kelvin Benjamin, you had Andre Holmes, you had these towering 6'4", 6'5" receivers, and you thought this is the way to go. And it's actually the opposite. It's you want someone who can present themselves as an open target to the quarterback and say, oh, look at me here, throw me the ball. So you can afford to wait a little bit longer. But if you want one of those players who's not a slot only player, now all of a sudden you need to start looking at additional traits. You can't just say, oh, I'm going to have nothing but Cole Beasley's on my roster. You have to look at their ability to be able to get off press coverage. That's a big part of being able to play on the outside in the NFL. You can have receivers that you have to accommodate for, and you have to put in motion, and you have to put them in the slot. You just can't have all of your receivers that way. Somebody has to be on the line, right? And so if you want that X receiver, if you want that player who can be isolated on one side against a top corner, they have to be able to have good body control because they're going to be fighting with the outside boundary. You have to be able to get off press, right? You have to be able to vertically stack players. And you have to have enough route nuance to be able to break on those in-breaking routes. A lot of offenses are based around the idea that there's going to be a backside dig, right? Odell Beckham was famous for that backside dig. Nobody ran it better. You'd always have that open there. You have to be able to run horizontally and get away from this coverage. So when I look at traits in a true heir apparent to Stephon Diggs, that's the kind of player I look at. Those are the kind of players who profile as being traditionally number one receivers. And so, you know, we can get into nuances about whether or not you think that's Adonai Mitchell or Brian Thomas or players like that. But ultimately, that's the reason why I had historically been out on Keon Coleman from a stylistic standpoint. And I think that that is a really good point made by Carl that would seem to back that up.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, we mentioned Xavier Worthy, and you just mentioned that I would rather have his teammate, A.D. Mitchell. I think Mitchell, stylistically, in terms of what he would bring to the table to the Bills, makes a lot of sense for this team. In addition to the burst, in addition to the athleticism, he does have a good frame, good size to him. But you don't want to just fall in love with one receiver. There's a case to be made for the Troy Franklins of the world. There are guys in round two that I could see the Bills liking and being quite high on. Xavier Leggett's one that I think that actually could even go higher than what some expect in this draft. So, you know, there's a flavor that I'm sure that Joe Brady is looking for I hope that the Bills will kind of go into this in terms of finding that receiver. To a certain extent, the way that Bobby Babich explained when the Bills kind of fell in love with Terrell Bernard, it wasn't, they weren't looking for a guy at a prototypical size, a prototypical weight. They're looking for a guy that can do X, Y, and Z for this team. And when you're looking at these receivers, can he do this, that, and the other? That's what I hope they're doing, rather than just looking at, you know, the 40 time, the height, the highlights, things like that. And obviously they go way beyond that when it comes to teams picking for players, but I don't want them to go in thinking you need someone of a certain size, like you said, because of the radius. Going with an open mind, look at the skill sets of the overall players and kind of evaluate from there.
We're cruising here on a Monday night, over 3,000 people watching across all the platforms. And we're going to do a little bit of a rapid fire close to the program tonight because we've got a bunch of questions in from the insider line. And again, if you want to become an insider, Shout Buffalo Bills insider, text 716-528-6727. 2-week free trial, $3.99 a month after that. What that gives you is access to Ryan and I. Every time a Bills move happens, anything Bills news is happening, we're texting the insiders about it first before we go on any other platform, including this podcast right here. Obviously, it's a little bit of a deeper dive in the podcast, but it gives you that access to the analysis in your text message inbox. It's a great time. We're brought to you on the text line by Kerry C. Beyer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litro, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, give them a call, 716-852-1234, or check out litrolaw.com. All right, guys, it is the gift that keeps on giving. Stephon Diggs headlines. I feel like we do this every other week, and I apologize for those that are just so sick of hearing about it. But I actually went and listened to, you know, Mike Lombardi's a friend of the program. He's been on the show a couple of times. To be honest with you, since I started covering the NFL in 2018, I've listened to the GM Shuffle. And oftentimes thought it's a really good podcast with really good content, but I got to be honest with you. Like, he's been off the mark lately. Like, I've not been all in, on the Michael Lombardi stuff. Some of the stuff coming out of there after his son, who was on the Raiders coaching staff, wasn't retained. I didn't think was great. And now this Stephon Diggs stuff just seems like absolute nonsense. Just the financials of moving on from Stephon Diggs, as we've talked about ad nauseum here over the last couple of months, it's enough to preclude the Bills from moving on unless he's super unhappy. And we have no indication that that is the case outside of some weird tweets that I feel like people overreact to. I bring this up because one of the first questions was, let me see if I can find it here. And I clicked on it and I lost it. And I want to kind of read these in order. Here it is. I hate to talk about it again. This comes from our buddy, Brad Richardson. But the rumor mill about Diggs is still going strong. What's the chances of a June 1st trade? Some are talking a trade to the Texans. And that is exactly what Lombardi was pitching. I don't know why the Texans, with as good as that offense was last year, with Tank Dell, with, I believe Robert Woods is still there, Nico Collins, I think they brought back Noah Brown, is going to go out and spend $27 million on Stephon Diggs at 30 years old. Not to mention the other end of it, which is the Bills having to kind of foot the bill with the dead cap money over the next 2 years. I don't see it happening. Ryan, Bruce, thoughts on the Stephon Diggs melodrama that continues?
Yeah, much ado about nothing. People kind of just keep reading into his tweets, his messages. And he's told fans, and we've talked about this before, stay off his Twitter, stay off of his feed. Not everything has to do with the Bills and the NFL and things like that. They're just random messages, means absolutely nothing. The contract became locked in, guaranteed pretty much over the weekend. I didn't think they were going to move him before that. I definitely don't think they're going to move him now. Like you said, unless there is absolutely something that we are not hearing or seeing, and then it comes out, I don't see a scenario where he is moved. It makes no sense from a financial perspective, and it makes no sense for the Bills either in terms of what he still means to this team, what he still means to this offense, and the fact that, yes, eventually they do need to replace and they do need to find his heir apparent, but he would be a significant loss if you took him off of this roster this season.
It's one of those things where I can't imagine Stephon Diggs getting frustrated at just dealing with the same thing when he already told you. Like, it's one of those situations where you tell somebody what you mean, and then they come back again and go, well, what did you mean? He goes, well, I told you what I meant. And then you say, well, yeah, but what did you mean, though? And he goes, yeah, but I told you. Like, we do this dance every offseason where he says weird, cryptic things. He comes up and shows up at training camp. He gets asked about the weird, cryptic things. He says, I want to be here. I want to retire here. I'm being weird and cryptic because it's fun. It has nothing to do with football. And then we just do the whole song and dance all over again, right? This is every single year. It's the same thing. So it's like, at some point, the guy just told you what it is. And here's what it boils down to. It really boils down to, yeah, but his tweets. Right. And that's really it. It's yeah, but his tweets. I mean, yeah, he said this. Yeah, every time he's been asked, he said this. Yeah, but his tweets. Right. And it's really all it is. And when you live in a world that is a vacuum of content, which I don't think the NFL in the offseason is nearly the vacuum that other sports do. Because we have a free agent Monday and they dominates an entire week. And then we have a draft and it dominates an entire week. We have people running in their skivvies in Indianapolis and it dominates the sports world for a week. The NFL right. does not have a vacuum of content. We don't need to do this, guys. Like, we don't need to do this thing where we go, yeah, but his tweets. We've got more than enough content to handle in the offseason. But it really boils down to, yeah, but his tweets.
Kyle Piper. Can you guys ask Bruce if this offseason so far was a food, what type of food would it be and why? Gotta get a food for thought reference in there.
I love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. You put me on the spot. See, normally I have an opportunity to prep those types of things. So we start with that. So I'll tell you what. Here's what I'm going to do off the top of my head. What I'm going to do off the top of my head is I'm going to say that if this offseason so far was a food, it is a Chinese buffet. Ooh. And I'll tell you why it's a Chinese buffet. Has anyone ever walked into a Chinese buffet and walked out with really strong emotions one way or another? You walked out and go, that was the best meal I've ever had in my life. Or you walk out and go, I am never, ever eating Chinese food ever again because that was terrible. No, you always walk out and you go, yeah, that was exactly what I thought it was going to be. I am 100% whelmed by this. I am not overwhelmed. I'm not underwhelmed. I'm just whelmed because that's what you can do in Europe. You can be whelmed. And so for me, that's the way I feel about this offseason. Nothing has been unexpected. The Bills signed a guy because they lost Gabe Davis and they signed a wide receiver that had familiarity with Brandon Bean and with Joe Brady. Anybody shocked? Oh, what's that? Oh, okay. They cut a bunch of players who we thought they were going to cut. Okay, that's about right. I mean, the only thing, I mentioned it earlier, the only thing that was shocking to me was cutting Mitch Morse. That was it. Everything else was like, yeah, expected. Oh, what's that? The Josh Allen restructure? Okay, expected. Oh, they're going to try and find a kind of a bargain bin safety that they can kind of get as they kind of ascend. They want to kind of get an ascending player like Micah Hyde or Jordan Poyer. Okay, yeah, no, this is all about expected. Micah Hyde being cut was like that one crunchy thing that you have that shows up in your sesame chicken that one time. And then you just go, okay, it's not going to stop me. I'm just going to move that over the side. I'll get some Kung Pao and I'll be fine. But ultimately, it's a Chinese buffet. Yeah, there's variety of moves, but none of them are unexpected. None of them are like, you go to a Chinese buffet, you look and they got, you know, prime rib on the buffet. You're like, what's that? That's out of place. That's not supposed to be there. No, it's all the same thing. It's sesame chicken. It's Kung Pao. It's Mugu Gai Pan. It's whatever it is.
Tao.
Yeah, it's General Tao's. No. So for me, if the Bills offseason thus far was a food, it's a Chinese buffet.
I almost want to ask you now, player by player, what they would be at the buffet. Like, what is the Mitch Trubisky? Is he like those powdered sugar peanuts that you get like at the end? Like, it's, they're good. They're fine. It's
he's the self-serve ice cream machine at the very end. That's what he is. Okay.
I like that. I like it. It
could be dude, I don't know about that. I can't agree with that. The soft serve at the end is high level. Honestly, like when I was a kid, when we went to those buffets, that was the highlight of the trip for me. Speaking of which,
but yeah. it doesn't get more vanilla than Mitch Trubisky, though.
I know, but you get the swirl. You could get the swirl vanilla. And they have a toppings bar at most of them. So what are we talking about here? That is a wonderland. Okay. Like, okay. So I bring this up and maybe it's different at Chinese buffets. I don't know if I've ever been to a Chinese buffet. I gotta get that. You gotta send me a good one. Buy stocks over on YouTube. I found a Ponderosa. So funny story. My dad worked at Ponderosa for decades, like probably like 20 years, worked in HR for them. So we would go to dinner at Ponderosa when I was a kid, like every week. And we would just crush that buffet. And at the end, they had one of those soft service machines and it was unbelievable. Where did I just see it? Oh, I saw a Ponderosa in Orlando down at Disney World. They had one right outside of Disney World. I almost went in for like nostalgia, but I didn't because I'm an adult and I'm not going to Ponderosa, but you get it.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Totally get it. Love the nostalgia factor though.
All right. We got to get to one more question here. Alex Barber, with some cap room and plenty of picks, will Bean take a swing at a veteran free agent with a big price tag? If so, what position? And honestly, Ryan, and then Bruce, definitely chime in here. I would have thought like maybe like defensive tackle would have been that position, but I don't know if there's that guy left out there. Tyre Tarte is a guy that we talked about, but I don't even know what he's necessarily going to yield. I don't think that they're going to, like, everybody's been talking about Jeffrey Simmons, and I don't know if that even ends up being a big ticket item. Like, I think the fact that he's hanging out there, I don't know if the market's going to be as plush as maybe he thought, but I don't know. I don't see another big money move down the pike, and most of it is because I just don't think there's a lot of star power left.
Yeah, Justin Simmons would be a name-wise would make a lot of sense. If the Bills do make a big-name addition, it might come post-draft, just like what we saw last year with Leonard Floyd. There'll be some cuts that come post-draft in terms of teams addressing some needs or getting a player or prospect that maybe they weren't envisioning, and then that allows them to open up or to move on from a veteran. So if the Bills do make a move like that, I don't think it comes until later on. May, June range. And again, at that point, you're not spending huge money. You're trying to get a good value like they did, like we said, 1 year ago with Leonard Floyd, that type of deal in my mind. So maybe not defensive tackle. Maybe it's a pass rusher. They always look to try to upgrade in that area. But right now, Simmons would be the big name, obviously. He hasn't really been linked to anyone, though. So that's what makes it interesting.
I'm not sure if you get rid of your 30-plus-year-old safety and then turn around and give big money to a 30-year-old safety. I don't know if the Bills are going to do it. It feels to me like the opposite of what you're wanting to trend, get younger and cheaper, right, at that position. For me, when I look at quote-unquote big names, I say, who? Who's the big? Right. I mean, Mike Williams? Yeah, as a receiver is the biggest name maybe out there aside from Justin Simmons. I mean, Odell Beckham's a big name at this point, but is he a big impact at this point? He's a perfectly reasonable player. I actually think that the longer this goes into the offseason, I'll tell you who I would not be surprised if they end up a Buffalo Bills, Emmanuel Ogba. And I don't think that's a big money at all.
No, not at all.
It feels like a player. Has nothing to do with the big money part of the question. Everything to do with what Ryan said as far as a later acquisition. I can picture Emmanuel Ogba being a player that the Buffalo Bills would value. I think the skill set, his ability to set the edge against the run, is something they've always valued in their defensive ends. And I think Von Miller was kind of the weird archetype. He was the departure from the norm when it comes to skill set on that. And so for me, if you're going to make another move that is of note that we haven't previously talked about, that one sticks out to me.
I'm hanging out on Ogba though, Ryan. Like, I'm not in any rush to get that deal done. And I think the longer that you wait, the better price tag that probably becomes. But I'm a big fan of the Ogba move. I mean, I remember when he was hitting in free agency, we talked a lot on this show about how he was a perfect, you know, scheme fit, what they want to do, the versatility. I think that that makes a lot of sense. And I just think with the injury history, you know, and it's the same argument that I made with Julian Blackman in the, I was having a conversation with one of the Texas insiders about, you know, they were pitching like a 3-for-$20 million contract for Blackman. I'm like, with the injury history, I don't think he's going to get anywhere close to that, especially with, you know, guys like Cameron Curl and Jeremy Chin that just didn't find that market out there. I think you're going to get him at a much lower AAV.
Yeah, I agree with that. And when it comes to Ogba, the only incentive you would have to signing him pre-draft range is it wouldn't mess with the compensatory pick formula. He was released. You can wait, though, obviously, post-draft, too. What is it, May 5th, something around that time is the deadline where any players you sign after that date, it doesn't factor in. So it's not a rush, but, you know, that is the one reason you could potentially sign him pre-draft to a reasonable deal, fill one of those holes on your roster once again to kind of keep teams guessing on what you might do in the draft.
Mr. Nolan, thank you so much for joining us, giving us an hour of your time. I want to give you a moment to let everybody know where they can find your podcast, the best place to follow you, and anything else you want to shout out.
If for some reason you listened to the show and said, I desperately need to hear that guy talk more, then you can find me on social media at Bruce Exclusive. And my show, The Bruce Exclusive, drops every Thursday morning on the Buffalo Rumblings podcast channel.
Awesome stuff. Like I mentioned earlier in the show, we are coming to 2-9's Kitchen Bar inside the Whirly Golf Dome. Little over 2 weeks from now, 16 days. We are coming out at 6 p.m. We're going to have a live shout episode. Come out, hit the dome, you know, get some swings in early if you want to show up maybe right after work, and then come hang out with us in the bar, order some dinner, get some drinks, and then we're going to do a live podcast, be talking Bills all night. It is going to be awesome. Man, so many people watching tonight. This is awesome numbers. They all came for the Bruce Nolan factor. Thank you so much, buddy. We really appreciate you hopping on with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Ryan, final word.
Yeah, final word. Bills Mafia, stick with us. We'll have another show live this week. Join us live, though, at our next show coming up. And, you know, anything that breaks over the next week or two, we'll have it first for our insiders. So join the text insider line, and we'll also have you covered here on show.
Boom. Take care, everybody. See you Wednesday night.